You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
And I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined on this program by Christine Remy and Jackie Monroe, two new media artists who chose to explore the frontiers of portraiture with installations in this year's Currents New Media Festival in Santa Fe. Christine Remy is an artist working in new media like holography and LED installations and paintings. She received her MFA from Mills College, studied at the Sorbonne, and has exhibited her work widely. Jackie Monroe is the proprietor of Stories for Change, which creates participatory story-based communications. She has been a resident at the Santa Fe Art Institute and La Escuelita Nicaragua, and has taught and spoken for years about collaborative and community storytelling. Something that I think would be really nice to discuss with both of you is these storytelling forms that, in a sense, you both are working with to one degree or another. Is there something new happening here? Are these old storytelling forms just being told in new ways? And I don't mean from the tech perspective or the actual media perspective, but do you think that given the faster pace that we have for communication, do you think that there's a place for these kinds of stories? And what does that place look like now? What does that place look like going forward? I don't know if that's too broad a question, but I'm hoping you both could maybe speak to that a little bit.
So, for example, with the work that you had at Currents, you both had these digital portraits of people and people who have struggled and people of color. It's almost impossible not to have an emotional connection with the individuals, the actual individuals in the portraits. And yet you're not necessarily making a statement about them. Or in the beginning, there was a girl and she became sad and here's what she looks like now that she's sad or something. So you're not putting any words around these portraits. You're not presenting your own interpretation of these portraits. You're not summing up the story, tying it up with a neat ribbon. And yet they're very expressive and communicative. I think what you're getting at is, are people ready for this sort of open-ended storytelling?
I think it depends on the person and that it's hard to generalize. In my installation, there was some introductory text, which was quite prominent, which there wasn't for a lot of the other pieces, that offered some social, political, and artistic context for what people were going to see, with the hope that that would encourage people to melt into that couch for a little bit longer. But I really just, in a lot of ways, I think it depends on the person. And maybe it's you walk up and you connect with something for some reason, and then, oh, there you are, and you're hooked in.
I think it's a big challenge these days because our attention spans have diminished so much. And the young people now have that instant gratification. What is it? 15 seconds worth of attention.
What?
Oh. No, just... I think it's a big challenge. I think we need it. And storytelling has been a human characteristic all the way back in one way or another, pictorially or verbally. People talk about how we don't have a connection and the young people are disassociating themselves so much. I think we're in definite need of it, but I think it is a challenge.
And folks self-select. Mm-hmm. If you're in Currents, you're more likely to engage anyway.
Yeah. And what do you mean by self-select?
I chose to go to Currents instead of anything else, instead of sitting on my phone on my couch or going on a hike or
watching Netflix all night.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Yeah. Both your work requires a little bit of patience, but not extreme patience. I mean, I was thinking about with the video diaries. I mean, I'm actually sitting on a couch and I'm wearing headphones and I'm watching TV. And it would be a shame for people not to get the most out of that kind of experience, which is just a little bit different than if you were binge watching Netflix.
Probably wouldn't be super well watched on Netflix, my work. But I'm only asking asking, you know, for 18 minutes. So,
and I do think also that that's the benefit of technology now, that we can bring a bigger picture of who we're talking about, whether it's these women or anybody we're telling a story about, that the technology can actually enhance the story. And people are getting used to that enhancement instead of just one picture or one written article or book. So I think we have the benefit of that, and it's still in its really early stages. So I think people are becoming aware of the problems, and parents are certainly becoming aware with their children. But if we can think of it as a benefit instead of a detriment to our work, then hopefully we can engage people in a more profound way. Instead of going along with, oh, this is just 15 seconds, we have to make this quick and show them fast images, if we make the attempt, again, to have good content, that they'll want to interact with it and take it in.
Content in that sense is always king, or whatever the emotional message is that is trying to be conveyed.
Just since we're talking about the content, and both of you have mentioned at different times sort of the language, the visual language that you use, can we talk a little bit about how that language may have changed or may be changing? And are there languages that are evolving around, say, interaction in a gallery? I mean, how do you create a setting that says, walk this way to see the holograms? What are these sort of unseen vocabularies that you're negotiating?
Currents did a really wonderful job of bringing a lot of that knowledge to the table, at least for me, or I hadn't done interactive work before. And so they were really good at helping me think of the considerations. Like, you want this video to be this far from that video so that people can turn around or bring a friend, or you want them to sit down because it's over X number of minutes. Speaking about light bleeding from one space to another, the ideal color of a wall for a projection to look high quality. A lot of things I had never thought about before that they introduced me to.
Why I'm curious about this question is I've had a couple of experiences lately where somebody's picked up a book. In one case, it was Thoreau. One case, it was Edward Abbey, and looked at it and said, I'm not sure I understand all these words. And I thought, boy, even among educated literate professionals, our verbal vocabularies are shrinking. But I think at the same time, our visual vocabularies are growing. I don't know much about film, but I know enough to know that there are sort of set tropes, or there are visual cues that you get. For instance, I just love the ghost girl. You know, the ghost girl looks like a Victorian ghost. I mean, so yeah. She's sort of got this visual vocabulary of her spooky little white dress and everything.
This might be not super exciting, but something I thought a lot about while putting this together was giving people two things. Enough information, enough context to feel comfortable in the space and understand its boundaries, because you're taking something that I might traditionally show on a screen or in a movie theater and putting it into like a three-dimensional space. So feeling like they're not confused or distracted by that confusion, but also not giving them all the answers. So if they went from screen to screen or room to room, they could build on their own knowledge of what they were understanding. Because I've been to some interactive pieces where I'm not sure what the limits of this world are, and that makes me really hesitant to engage. And so that was something I thought about quite a bit. And then that was also manifested in the second thing, which is the nitty-gritty of, like, how do you give people these cues to move from one space to the other or tell them it's okay? And I would put in strategic, like, 5 seconds of black here, 5 seconds of black there, or try to use more traditional filmmaking tropes of, like, this is over now. You can go.
Fini.
to help guide their experience, because it is new and it is kind of unsettling, and you don't want to give everyone everything at once, but you also don't want to leave them lost.
And it can be intimidating as well. So now that I think about it, with my work, I don't really have a technology that gets in the way of viewing the piece. I like that aspect of it. You don't have to put on headphones or eye goggles or anything. And so it is sort of a traditional viewing vantage point.
There's just you
and the
work.
Piece. That's right. And I would like to more or less keep to that. I think it makes it accessible to the viewer. In my work, I have thought of that. that. And I would like to make it as simple as possible for the viewer to get the meaning of the work.
Something about Christine's work that really struck me is I felt like before I looked at her work, it looked at me. I didn't really have a choice to not engage. I would turn around and there it was, mm-hmm. which is not something I experience often.
Well, I think each woman does look directly at you at one point, mm-hmm. and so it makes it really personal. And going back to when people thought it was creepy, to me, that was sort of a way of saying, I'm not going to go there with this piece. I'm not going to interact with it. It was an easy out to say, oh, it sort of creeps me out. I'm not going to engage with this, which I guess is a human characteristic. Also, if it gets a little scary or mm-hmm. too sad, some people thought it was also too sad. They don't want to go there.
That leads me to want to ask you both about your decisions to work with people of color, to work with women, to work with difficult subjects, to work with stories of struggle or loss. What draws you to those stories, and is there a way that you think your technologies are helping you help these people tell their stories in different ways or in better ways?
It feels like the stories choose me. I mean, a lot of it ends up being sort of circumstance or where you are in a moment. I also think the story chooses the person, and there has to be a connection between the maker and the subject for anything to even begin. When I make more traditional documentary work, I always say it's biased just by who I like and who likes me, because you can't spend that much time filming someone unless you get along just as friends. I don't know, it's a hard question to answer.
I found in my work that I had reached a point where it was becoming less personal, and I was finding that my work didn't have a lot of meaning to it. I was mostly painting and incorporating light, but it seemed I was hedging a little bit. I was really influenced by the LA-based light and space artists, and I love the ethereal, ghost-like projections, those kinds of things. I found that I was working mostly with color and light, but I never used the figure, and I never used a story of my own. And so I had to think, what am I most uncomfortable working with that's a part of me? And I had actually lost a child some years ago. So that's where I thought, okay, I'm going to make a piece about this. It's going to be personal. But it was the first portrait for sure, or figurative work that I had done in years and years. It's interesting now that the work that I chose to do that had a deeper meaning for me came out having deeper meaning for a lot of people.
Well, that's, I think, where some of the best artwork comes from.
Right.
And then it transcends the original storyteller in that sense. These aren't my stories, but I found them deeply resonant regardless, mm-hmm. which I think is something you were trying to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely.
You're giving me the sly look. Like,
no, yeah.
Can of worms.
Yeah, it could be a can of worms. I came to this work because I had a very intimate relationship with this community that met a lot of my personal needs in being able to really see myself reflected back by people who cared about me. And then it turned out to be a relationship built around image making and language learning. Literal languages, Spanish, but also visual languages and languages of relationship. And so it seemed really natural to go in this direction. And then it pleases me to hear that these stories that are so personal resonate.
Yes.
Just like Christina's saying.
Yeah.
For me, anyway, that's where the finest art comes
lives.
From.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that it's something so intimate and personal for the creator, but then it somehow becomes transcendent for the viewer.
Also, I think now we have mechanisms and tools available to us that can make the experience even more intimate. And what technology can ultimately in its best form provide. Usually when I think of some work I want to do, I have to think what is the best means to make that work. That's why, you know, I jump from medium to medium. But it's trying to find the best way to say what I want to say.
That seems like a really nice place to leave that part of our discussion. If you want to learn more about Jackie Monroe, visit her website, cshareact.com. If you want to learn more about Christine Remy, visit christineremy.com. We also have more links at the Augmented Humanity program pages. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs Humanities at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire. Production assistance by Tristan Klum.